This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Like a lot of other people, I think of butterflies as beautiful and moths as boring pests. Boy, was I surprised when I opened the new book, Night Vision, The Secret Designs of Moths. The book features spectacular enlarged images of moths, which reveal that moths have richly colored, furry, elaborately patterned wings. These enlarged, detailed images are amazingly beautiful, but also kind of creepy. They were created by Joseph Scheer by placing the moths on a high-resolution scanner. Scheer co-directs the Institute of Electronic Art at Alfred University in New York. A little later, we'll meet his co-author, Mark Epstein, a scientist who studies moths and butterflies. Joseph, there's an illustration of a certain moth. It's illustration number 27 that I'd like you to describe. Would you describe it for us?
That would be Hypoprepia fucosa, and that's a common name is a lichen moth or painted lichen moth. It's about, in real life, about a little over a half an inch across, and it is has these wonderful pinks and reds and yellows and charcoal grays, dark borders on it, on the underwing, and the top wing is kind of striped. Being so small in real life and then being able to blow it up larger, you get to see this incredible amount of detail of each little scale. And next to it is a full-page enlargement, which is the size of the book, which is about 14 by 12 inches almost. And it then shows you what each little scale looks like.
Well, you know, I have to say that among the things that amaze me about this photograph is you have these beautiful multicolored wings, and at the end of the wings is a charcoal color fringe. Around the moth's head, if I may use that word, there's almost like hair, like a little tuft of hair. The antenna has this, what would you call those spiky things sticking out of the antenna?
Pectins or combs or...
Okay. And you have a blow-up just of the wing on the opposing page, and the wing is just like, it's like furry. It's kind of magnificent. Joseph Scheer, would you explain the technical process that you use to get this high-resolution, extra-large blow-up of a half-inch-sized moth?
What I use is a very high-resolution flatbed scanner. It's similar to what most people have in their homes and offices these days, but it is capable of producing an image with up to 14,000 pixels per inch, and it can do it just with a stunning and exquisite detail. I actually live in a very remote part of western New York, and I go out at night throughout the summer, and I collect the moths. I had to develop a technique of getting them very flat, and I prepare them in a way very different than a Lepidopterist does for collections, because there can't be a pin in them. So I had to devise a technique for spreading them and drying them before I put them on the scanner. And then each scan takes about, up to an hour, depending on the resolution and how I'm scanning it. And then I work on it a little bit in the computer, make sure everything's correct, color corrected and that, and then they actually end up being large format iris prints that are 3 feet by 4 feet.
How did you start photographing insects through this high-resolution scanner? Yeah.
Well, I don't see it as photography, and I don't see myself as a photographer. I come from a printmaking background, which had a lot of drawing and painting involved. And so I'm not looking through a lens or working with any photochemicals, but I think at the point that we live in today where, you know, technology has changed all our lives, you know, the borders between mediums have all broken down. So it looks somewhat photographic. It looks somewhat like a painting. It looks like a watercolor. It has all these different qualities in the work.
Oh, so when you got your high-resolution scanner at the Institute for Electronic Arts, what made you think, oh, I think I'll try putting insects in here and see how they look when they're blown up?
It actually started quite as a whim. It was donated to us by the Creo Corporation, and they brought it in and sent in a technician to set it up because it's a very complicated piece of equipment. He calibrated it and said, okay, it's ready to scan. And in the room there was a plant, and it had a tiny little gnat flying around it. And I thought, well, if this thing is really that powerful, I just grabbed the gnat as a joke, you know, not being serious at all, and threw it under the scanner and scanned it. And when the image came up, I was just like, floored because it was so incredibly beautiful that I saw this little tiny insect that I would normally just dismiss that had these beautiful multifaceted compound eyes. It had hairs all over its body. Its wings were pearlescent metallic blues and greens. And I thought, oh my God, you know, if that looks like, you know, so incredible, what do other insects look like?
And what was so compelling about moths that led you want to do a whole study of them and then a whole book?
Well, I started then just doing all sorts of insects. And, you know, coming being an artist and not ever studying Lepidoptera or entomology before, I just started around learning how to collect insects, you know, self-teaching, being self-taught of how to do it and getting some books and, you know, a butterfly net and all that and running around, you know, looking totally ridiculous, but capturing all these things. And I thought, well, I wanted to make an installation that could fill like a gallery space with maybe 50, 60 of these very large prints. I thought it'd be a very powerful impact. And so I, you know, start collecting everything. And I thought by the end of the summer, I could get maybe 200 species if I was really, really lucky and worked really hard. But by the end of 2 weeks, I had over 500 species. And then I realized just how many, you know, thousands and thousands of species of insects are, you know, out there and around us, you know, every day. And I teach in an art building that has lots of big windows, and at night moths would always fly in, and I would find them, you know, during the week in the windowsills or on the floor, and I would pick them up, and I thought they were really amazing. And after learning how that, you know, to set up an actual a light station to attract them, I enlisted the help of my friend Mark Klingensmith, because he had a 100-acre property just outside of Alfred, the little village of Alfred, where Alfred University exists. And we set up these lights, and faithfully for the last, you know, 5 years, almost every night in the summer when the weather is well, we go out there and see what species fly in. And I guess to date, we have over 1,000 different species that I've collected and scanned in and trying to identify. And that's where I, at that point, started to enlist the help of Mark Epstein, who was at the Smithsonian at the time, to how do you go about identifying these things?
Well, let me introduce Mark Epstein, who's a lepidopterist who is, among other things, a research associate at the Smithsonian Institution in Washington, D.C., and a lepidopterist is an expert in butterflies and moths. Mark Epstein, are you astonished by these images, these blown-up high-resolution images of moths, or did you already know how beautiful moths could be?
Yes, I did. I had an fair advantage, and one that actually many lepidopterists have, and that is that we look at them under microscopes. So a lot of the detail and the softness and the things that Joseph has been talking about are more apparent, and that's part of what engaged me in getting involved in this project, is that it was a really great way to sort of show the world what we already see. And even Joseph's description of the little fungus gnat at the beginning of the program is very typical of a lot of insects, that once you look at them under magnification, you see a beauty that is not always readily obvious.
Well, Mark Epstein, why don't we see these magnificent colors of the moth? I can understand why we don't see the details in the antenna and the hair and fur on the moth, but the colors, how come we don't see all these bright colors when we see most of these little moths?
Actually, I think it's just because we just don't look at them, because they are so little. And, of course, Joseph is selecting out the prettier ones, but if the public spent time, like the lepidopterists do, you know, putting a sheet out at night with a illuminated with a light, a ultraviolet or a mercury vapor, you would see the colors. It's just that, you know, this draws the attention that, you know, normally people don't go and do that.
Why do moths mostly fly at night, and why are they drawn to the light?
Generally, what we are all taught, though it's still not very well understood, is that the moths, especially the male moths, are navigating and using a distant light source, which in nature would have been the moon, to basically sort of, you know, go on a particular course, and then they encounter a plume of pheromones, which are the chemical attractant that the female moth is broadcasting out into the air. So the moths, in a sense, are kind of zigzagging around using the moon as sort of a compass and then encountering a pheromone, and then that guides them into the female. And of course, you know, being nocturnal, these type of moths, being at flying at the nighttime, need, you know, more of a chemical cue, because visually it would be impossible to detect the female moths.
So when we put on a porch light and all the moths from the community gather around, are we confusing them?
Yes, we are. Yes, and that's part of why mercury vapor lights have been controversial, because they really pull in a, not for the collecting purpose, but for the purpose of, you know, illuminating our cities, that a lot of moths get basically fried by them, get attracted into them. And it's often given as one of the reasons why there's sort of a decline in the numbers of moths from what we once used to see.
Now that you know how beautiful moths are when you can see them enlarged, can you see any of this beauty without enlarging them? If you're just looking at your porch light and there's a bunch of moths flying around, can you see the colors? Can you see anything that is so attractive and compelling to you when the image is blown up?
Well, sometimes the strange postures that the live moths have do obscure some of these things. They might roll their wings in such a way that, or the front wing might cover a bright red hind wing, which is a device that's often used to scare off birds. So sometimes the moths actually do things as living creatures that look very different from the way they're portrayed here in the book.
So they're hiding their own beauty.
Yes, and sometimes that's for different reasons. Like I say, that could be used as a defense, to really look like a piece of wood, or, you know, just not stand out. Also, it's interesting, sometimes what we consider to be really beautiful, when we think about it in the context, might actually be a device to be hidden. For example, I work on some moths that the males are sort of clear wing and sort of drab, and the females have a bright green stripe on their wings. And normally, butterflies and moths, like birds, you tend to find the males are more attractive. But in this case, really the females, to our eye, are prettier, yet it's that green stripe on the females that actually make them more hidden and more protected. So a lot of times it takes sort of perspective to thinking about kind of what world the moth lives in, to kind of almost readjust what our aesthetic is of them.
Is the green camouflage?
Yes.
Mark Epstein, when you look at the wings of the moth blown up in high resolution detail, you can see this fur, is that the right word, on the wing?
Actually, it's what we call scales, which is essentially what the word or the name Lepidoptera means. Lepid is scale in Latin, and optera is winged, so scale winged is what we're seeing. And a lot of times these scales, which is a wonderful thing about this book, you can see the variation. You know, some are very hair-like, and that's what gives that woolly appearance, whereas others are more flattened. We tend to think of butterflies as having more of the flattened type scales, which give them a little crisper kind of look than kind of these woolly looking moths.
And is it the scales that we're seeing when we see the kind of like white dust that moths sometimes leave?
Yes.
What's the function of the scales on the moth's wings?
Actually, one theory is that it's a very good device for, if they were to get caught into a spider's web, to be able to free themselves. They're also somewhat repellent to water. It's a way to avoid getting inundated with water in nature. Also, it's a defensive, well, just like with the spider web in general, anything that allows them to escape in some way, you know, by getting brushed off, sort of the Teflon effect, being able to kind of free themselves. That's a useful device. But then probably most important is that it's a way that they can recognize each other with mate recognition in close range. Even moths, which, you know, are basically relying less on vision still are seeing, you know, ultraviolet and certain reflections off the scales, and how they're arranged is one of the ways of species recognition.
It's only through blowing up the images of these moths through new high-tech equipment, this high-resolution scanner, that you're able to see the color, the texture, and the beauty of these moths. Does this make you think that there's a whole world that's invisible to you, that's too small to see, and it's a world of, like, mystery and beauty? Joseph?
Well, it seems it's so funny because, like, I've started to look at things closer and closer, and I have friends who laugh at me because I'm always, like, hunched over looking at things and looking at the minutiae of things, like how structures come together. So it's a whole world of fascination now that I have of, like, looking at the, you know, at the micro and, you know, the micro and the nano, how beautiful it can be.
Beautiful, you know, but maybe creepy sometimes too?
Well, you know, there is that kind of, like, when I first started doing, like, this wonderful kind of horrific beauty, there's, like, the tent caterpillar moth. It's a total furball. And the large prints I have, when you first go up to it, you kind of gasp because it looks like a teddy bear. But it also has this kind of visceral thing that if you can almost feel it in your mouth, it becomes so creepy because it's, like, so textury and hairy. And so it draws you in, and it kind of repulses you a little bit at the same time. Some of the, you know, the images. And to me, that's really interesting. How can something have that power?
And do you use mothballs for your clothes in the winter?
Actually, I don't. You know, I hate the way those things smell. So, you know, actually, they put those in the Smithsonian. All the collections all smell like that because they have the mothballs in with the moths, you know. So, you know, it has that smell. And
we are doing away with them, though.
Why do you have the mothballs in with the moths?
That actually protects the moths from other insects that get in, like carpet beetles. However, we are phasing out the use of naphthalene or mothballs, and are freezing our collections as a way to, because mothballs really aren't, you know, that great for humans.
Well, thank you both so much for talking with us.
Well, thank you, Terry.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure.
Yeah, it was great.
Joseph Scheer co-directs the Institute of Electronic Art at Alfred University in New York. Mark Epstein is a lepidopterist who now works with the California Department of Food and Agriculture. Their new book is called Night Vision: The Secret Designs of Moths.